playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands. Playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
RTE Radio is in big trouble if this catches on. I'm talking about the trend for fellas to sit in front of microphones and say nothing. Last week it was John Delaney. This week it was Drew Harris and Paddy Cosgrave. Paddy Cosgrave, the Web Summit guy, invited Philip Boucher-Hayes from Drive Time to his office for an interview about his campaign against Irish tax policy. And then this happened.
You're not going to talk to me because you won't answer the questions about the way you started the debate. Paddy, let's sit down and have a talk about the tax issues. Why not? You invited me here to do this interview and now you're showing me out? Okay, your premises, of course, I'm happy to leave.
The next morning, crime correspondent Paul Reynolds sat down for a chat with Garda Commissioner Drew Harris. Paul was interested in finding out why police from Northern Ireland were in Garda headquarters carrying guns.
All protocols, the protocols that are in place for cross-border movement have been adhered to and has already been referred to by the Minister.
I accept all of that, but I'm asking you, as the head of the Garda Síochána, would you be satisfied if the Taoiseach was escorted into government buildings in similar circumstances?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question directly because it does impact directly on my security and my security arrangements.
Back in Paddy Cosgrave land, later that morning, he went on Sean O'Rourke's programme to explain the reason he had blanked Philip Boucher-Hayes the day before was as a publicity stunt for his campaign. Then he invited Philip to another interview, at which he offered him an envelope stuffed with money. It was part of a prize he called the Elephant Prize, which he was awarding to media organisations that have ignored our controversial tax laws.
Paddy Cosgrave can't be a regular listener to this programme because I looked at our database and I stopped counting after I reached 30 reports on tax avoidance, vulture funds, special purpose vehicles and the like in just recent years.
Back in Drew Harris land.
You are the Garda Commissioner. You would be responsible for their security. You have a say in their security.
Paul Reynolds is asking how the Garda Commissioner would feel if he heard that the government was being guarded by armed police from a foreign power on Irish soil.
Well, I'm not going to answer that question directly because it directly impacts on my own security arrangements. It does.
No, I'm not talking about your security. I'm talking about the security of the government ministers, other people.
No, by implication draws me into this as well.
Back in Paddy Cosgrave land, not only was Paddy offering Philip Boucher-Hayes cash, but he was also giving him a free lecture on how to conduct an interview.
But can we talk about your own companies and their tax arrangements?
Philip refers to one of Paddy Cosgrave's companies, which is incorporated in Delaware, although the company is based in California. Delaware has similar tax policies that Paddy Cosgrave is complaining about Ireland having.
These types of arguments are not permitted at the level of a secondary school's debating competition. They would just be rejected by adjudicators. But in media, they can play out reasonably well.
No, so my line is that there is an element of hypocrisy in what you are advocating because you yourself are availing of the same tax avoidance structures with your company.
The problem with the line of argument is it doesn't in any way diminute the weight of the UN's findings
others. It absolutely doesn't, but it does lead people to ask themselves the question, why is Paddy Cosgrave not launching Facebook ad campaigns against Delaware?
Well, that's a very good question. First and foremost, I'm a citizen of this country, so it's very easy to point fingers at terrible things that happen in other parts of the world, in North Korea or elsewhere. But I'm not a citizen of those countries. I'm a citizen of Ireland.
Do you think that you are hurling stones from inside the tax avoidance glasshouse?
I'm hurling stones from within the tax avoidance glasshouse. I'm certainly hurling stones from within the tax avoidance capital of the world.
And back in Gardaland.
We were making presumptions about what my security arrangements are, and it would be better if they didn't.
But do you understand the optics of you being seen as the Garda Commissioner being driven in to headquarters? Do you understand the optics? Never mind the security.
Well, I am the Garda Commissioner. And regrettably, the lifestyle that threats have imposed on me is one of that I receive security. And it's not a position that one would volunteer for, but at the same time, it does directly relate to my security and the security of my family. And I don't wish to comment much further on this.
Drew Harris, Garda Commissioner, and Web Summit guy, Paddy Cosgrave. Fortunately for RTE Radio, there are still people like Brendan Dennehy around. He not only sits in front of a microphone and says things, but he also helps other men to talk too. He was on with Sean O'Rourke talking about classes he runs on fatherhood.
Unfortunately, in my case, my father and I had no common dialogue, which wouldn't have been uncommon in those days. Men were seen in the past, I think, as stoic units of economic activity. You handed the checkup and off you went. And we've gone from emotionally constipated to incontinent in a very short period of time. It's like it's all emotions now.
Yeah. And just on that point, I mean, what do you think are the biggest issues parents are having, particularly fathers and sons?
I think it's a struggle. There's a number of things going on. There's technology. There's this. I have a 22-year-old son, and when your researcher rang me, I was getting my hair cut by a Turkish gentleman, and we both discovered that we had children aged 22. And he mentioned Ramadan, and I said, "Will your son be observing Ramadan?" And he just shot me a look in the mirror, and I knew straight away what the answer to that was.
So the programme that you have devised, I mean, what are the elements of that?
So it's held over two nights. The first night, it's just exploratory, where we talk about what's your relationship with your father, what's your relationship like with your children. And before the second evening, they're given these three questions to go home with, where the children in the house fill out the questions. As we grow older, how will our relationship change? If you could change one thing about your father, what would that be? And describe a happy time you spent with your father.
Brendan Dennehy on Today with Sean O'Rourke. Fatherhood was the theme on 2FM's Game On programme. You'll remember that while this started off as a sports programme, last week it featured an Oireachtas report on the FAI ASCO, while this week it had a segment on parenting.
Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
The panel were discussing Tiger Woods. He won the US Masters on Sunday, and Game On spoke to his friend, super sports fan, JP McManus.
You know, Tiger, when he was playing, you know, he made some poor shots, not that many, but he'd made some poor shots, but he never followed a poor shot with a mistake, do you know?
Yeah.
So he always had that strength of mind to adjust pretty quickly to the situation he was in at the time.
Then, as I say, the discussion turned to fatherhood and the obligations of a sports fan father to introduce his children to heroes.
I think it was last summer, the golf was on the TV and Tiger was on, and my little fella Daniel was six at the time, and Tiger was on the telly, and I paused and I said, "Daniel, who's that?" And he looked up and he went, "Conor McGregor." And I was like, no. And I'm thinking, he's never ever going to get to know. And he sat down and watched the golf with me last night.
My youngest daughter spent much of yesterday calling him Tiger Roll, because she had a Euro on Tiger Roll to international and whatever. And I said, "Tiger Roll, I thought you said Tiger Roll was a horse." Yeah. Anyway, she's only five, but by the end of it, all of my kids knew exactly who Tiger Woods was.
Now, and we watched it again this morning, and he was out with his little sandwich chipping in the sitting room. And
I was the same, Sean Harry. Because
and then the conversation turned to discuss the kind of individual who had become this hero to look up to in sport, but not in life.
I mentioned, everybody is well aware of Tiger's indiscretions and what happened with his marriage. But I would just urge anyone to go and read the book that was released about him last year. One of the most detailed and well-researched books I've read on any sportsman or person ever. And to go and read what he went through as a child and the influence that his father had on him, the influence that his mother had on him, and how his whole childhood was geared towards becoming not just a professional golfer, but the greatest golfer of all time.
Yeah.
And when you read what he went through from the age of one, being sitting in a chair, watching his dad swing golf clubs, age of two, when he could swing a golf club, being out every day at the behest of relationships, social lives, everything fell second place to his golfing career. And you could not be a normal functioning adult, I don't think, without some sort of fall off based on what he went through.
If you want to buy that book, you won't find it in the parenting section. There's no denying that. He had an incredibly difficult upbringing. It created the phenomenal athletic champion that he has become. But I think in his last 5 to 6 years, he's realised that the human being that was never there is now coming out, because there's no way 10 years ago all those players would have waited for Tiger once he came off the 18th green.
No.
Game On from 2FM, the parenting show. The theme of parenting ran on RTE Radio throughout the week. On Sunday, on Radio 1, Sunday Sport featured Eric Donovan, champion boxer, who grew up without his father.
Like, I walked away from boxing so many times when I discovered all these other, I would just say, unpleasant pleasantries that life has to offer, you know, dossing around with the lads and the girls and drinking, smoking, everything like that. When I discovered what I thought was cool, I walked away from the club, and my coach, Dominic O'Rourke, would call to the house. If I'd go missing for 2 or 3 weeks, he'd call to the house, he'd sit down, he'd say, what's going on, you know, and he wouldn't come in all guns blazing or fingers pointing, but he'd just come in and sit down and listen. He'd have a cup of tea and he'd ask me what's up with me, and, you know, then I'd be offloading. I'd be saying, I'm sick of boxing, I've enough of boxing, I gave enough of my life to boxing, I could be 15 years of age, you know. But he'd just let me offload, and at the end he'd say, Eric, you know, you're gifted, you know, you're talented. And he'd say the words I never even heard before. And he'd this way of instilling a belief in me, like, by the time he'd leave, I'd be up shadowboxing in the mirror. And I'd be back in the club the following week, you know. And to say he'd done that 100 times would not be an exaggeration either.
Eric Donovan on Sunday Sport. Rachel Keogh spoke to Ryan Tuberty about her childhood.
Yeah, I was working the streets, like, when I was 13.
Right. Rachel explained that she had become a drug addict. She also told how she made a recovery, but, as she says, didn't connect with it. She wrote about her experiences as a child prostitute, which were incorporated into a stage play.
When we were doing rehearsals, I was watching this being played out, and honest to God, I can honestly say, looking back now, I was no more connected to that than Flight to the Moon. It was like watching this being played out, and it wasn't my life, like. And it kind of force hit me when I sat in the audience and I seen the audience's reaction. And they were horrified, like, they were, some of them were crying, some of them got up and walked out and everything. And I was like, oh my God, like, so it's stuff like that in recovery that you kind of have to
confront.
Come to terms with, yeah.
Summer understands that when winter takes her hand, that this time will be the last. And they won't meet again, no, no. She's long since lost her mind, but lucidly at times she describes with great details what he was like when they were young. And she'd forget he was no longer of this world. And she'd forget that neither was her eldest girl.
From the John Creedon Show. The Man Whom and his song Pennies for the Poor Basket.
Sophia.
On Radio na Gaeltachta, Helen Ní Hay came across something pretty unusual in her part of Kerry. Children cycling to school. She bumped into four girls, Fia, Eva, Hannah and Katie. They explained to her that it's their first day cycling, but it may be their last, because today they're in tracksuits, but the rest of the time they're in skirts. Skirts, they say, catch on bicycle saddles. We'll have a look at the options available to us for cycling, they say. From Saelo Yas on Radio na Gaeltachta.
On RT Junior Radio.
So last week on the show we had...
And on the children's channel RTE Junior, presenter Jamie Maguire had Jack on the line. Jack had won a competition.
You know what's pretty fun?
What's pretty fun?
Sometimes my mom lets me stay up for longer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's very fun.
And how much longer?
20 minutes, 10 minutes sometimes.
Jack on RTE Junior, the children's channel.
Gorgeous.
Oh, nice.
Isn't she gorgeous?
Over in 2FM back in the adult world, Africa and Carl were scrolling through social media when they came across a wedding video.
No. Footage has emerged of the moment a groom's ex apparently gay crashes his wedding to another woman. Even worse though, she did it wearing a bridal dress. So the ex-girlfriend gets down on her knees and
shouts. Oh, that's commitment.
And she shouts, it was my fault. We were on a break. As his new bride looks on in shock, it is alleged that she burst in during a ceremony in China just as the groom was about to kiss the bride, who walked off in anger. Oh God, I'm scalded.
Okay. African Carol on 2FM.
The story in the example today about a judge.
Over on Lyric FM, Marty Whelan was going through the papers.
A senior judge in the UK has revealed he was called for jury service. Now, we know there are people who are exempt. There are certain professions that exempt you. But this senior judge in the UK revealed he was called for jury service. I was only excused from the duty when he insisted he was actually going to sit as the judge in the case. The senior circuit judge said that even though he replied to the summons stating that he was the judge in the pending trial, his reason was rejected and he had to contact the jury's central summoning bureau directly. It was only when he phoned them they realised it was a mistake. Ah, for flip's sake.
For flip's sake, indeed. Marty was also marking anniversaries this week. The deaths of comedians Tommy Cooper and Spike Milligan.
Mart, yes. Here's another one from Spike Milligan for you this morning. I'm a hero with coward's legs. I've always loved you. Is there anything worn under the kilt? No, it's all in perfect working order. And then he had his sure cure for seasickness was to sit under a tree. And speaking of Tommy Cooper, as we were today on his anniversary, a man takes his Rottweiler to the vet. My dog is cross-eyed. Is there anything you do for him? Well, said the vet, let's have a look at him. So he picks the dog up and examines his eyes. Then he checks his teeth. Finally, he says, I'm going to have to put him down. What? Because he's cross-eyed. No!
Playback on RTÉ Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
My dog is cross-eyed. Is there anything you do for him? Well, said the vet, let's have a look at him. So he picks the dog up and examines his eyes. Then he checks his teeth. Finally, he says, I'm going to have to put him down. What? Because he's cross-eyed. No! No, he's really heavy.
From Marty in the Morning on Lyric FM, Mary O'Connor wrote to playback at rte.ie to suggest we play a tribute to Paddy Finlay, as heard on Drive Time on Monday evening. Paddy Finlay from Dublin died over last weekend. He was better known as Paddy Drac, the Dracula impersonator.
This is the coffin of Dracula.
This is my coffin.
Liam Geraghty had interviewed him.
I'm the only person alive that's on his 25th coffin. And I can prove that. Because coffins are not made for the hacking I give them.
And what's it like in there when you're in there?
Oh, it's very comfortable.
Of course, for most people, Paddy Drac is the man who ran around scaring kids during the St. Patrick's Day parades.
I was in the Wexford Inn, the other little show at dinner time, and the Patrick's Day parade was going. And I ran down and I jumped into the parade. Nobody asked me. But then I got a bite for every year and I was in it for 50 years up to this year. What's a frequency can at the shop?
As well as the parade, Paddy popped up at all sorts of events.
Paddy, could you go dress up tomorrow morning and go into Grattan Street? And I couldn't remember you said it was me REM outside HMV or me HMV outside REM. I hadn't the foggiest who REM was.
He went along, got chatting, and told them that if their LP did well and they were back in Dublin sometime, that he knew Louis Copeland.
Brings in Louis Copeland, he gave you a few bob off your suits. As you can see, my hair's grey. Well, you can't see it, but he can. But I spray my hair black, and it takes about 6 washes to get it out. I spray my hair black and the makeup. And people say to me, Paddy, you haven't changed in 50 years. I said, the makeup hasn't. You look under the makeup, you see it has changed.
Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist? It's now the Monster Mash.
The one and only Paddy Drac there. Now, terrible news coming from Paris, Notre Dame Cathedral is on fire.
Drive Time on Monday evening, just before the end of the programme at 7 o'clock.
Paris now to Lara Marlow. From the Irish Times. Lara, what is happening with Notre Dame?
Notre Dame is burning. I'm on my way there now on my bicycle. I saw a lot of sirens in the street. There's a bit of ash falling in the air and an enormous grey cloud of smoke up ahead to my left. The television footage as I left the apartment a little while ago was very, very dramatic. It almost looked like the sun setting. I mean, there was like this big orange ball of fire on the roof.
Hello and welcome to the Blue of the Night. And as we go to air, it's quite unbelievable. I've had a long day here. Suddenly you go to the newspaper feed.
On Lyric FM, Bernard Clark a little later on Monday evening.
It's really shocking and really upsetting. So for the people of Paris and for all the great French musicians and composers and artists of all walks of life, this is for you.
This is Viderunt Omnes, arranged by Perrotin for a performance in Notre Dame Cathedral, Paris in 1198. You can hear the full piece if you go to the Blue of the Night page on the Lyric FM section of RTE.ie and click on Monday Night.
People in this country should have nothing to do with the restoration of that cathedral in Paris.
The following day on Liveline, callers were divided in their reaction to the fundraising efforts to rebuild Notre Dame.
Macron, who was out crying last night, gave massive tax cuts to the wealthy and the elite in France. That you have billionaires in France running over themselves to contribute. 100 million by one billionaire, then there's another 200 million by another billionaire, and you have people out, the Gillette Jones were out in France for the last number of months complaining about what's going on in rural France and with the poor people in France.
Paris and the Parisians and the French people in general are passionate people, and I think we should most definitely, it's up to the individual, contribute to the restoration of this magnificent, iconic building. I mean, we're not just talking about, as I said in my text, about a little church in Ballygo backwards. We're talking about a magnificent piece of art.
From Liveline on Tuesday.
He too has to suffer. He has to die in order to save others. And he too has a
on the Leap of Faith later in the week, Jarlath Killeen from the Department of English and Trinity referred to Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, in a discussion on the influence of the Easter story on artists and writers.
Well, unless you think of Quasimodo as a Christ figure, I mean, he too has an abject body that it causes disgust to look at, but actually by the end, it's a beautiful body. It's a body that redeems.
That influence of the Easter story is evident right up to recent work, according to Jarlath Killeen.
So Harry Potter obviously is prophesied about before his birth. You know, he has to confront the great evil of his time. He's marked on his body. He has the scars or a stigmata of a kind. He must die himself. And then he is resurrected before he can finally defeat a kind of antichrist figure, or a serpent, a snake, but also something like the Superman story. In the 1940s, when Superman was originally written, his mother was called Mary and her husband's second name is Joseph. And they find this alien baby and he's given the title Jor-El. El being the Hebrew word for God.
Correct.
Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so right. He is essentially, you know, a God-man sent down to earth to save us from our sins, our tendency towards corruption.
From the Leap of Faith.
So the prayer is for protection.
The Like Family programme also had a religious theme this week. Ian Ella, an Orthodox Christian from Romania, told Brenda Donoghue about their services.
And the mass back home would be quite long. I remember it could last, I think, about 3 hours, 3-4 hours. It was very boring, I have to say. And I had to stand all the time.
The rosary was said from as far back as I can remember every single evening in the house.
Magella from Donegal.
Even when we were on holidays, me and my cousins used to be roaming about the beach at night and we would think, if we get far enough up this beach, they won't send for us, you know, for the rosary. But they always did. We were always fine, no matter how far away we were.
Despite her initial reluctance, Magella became a devout Catholic.
But none of my children are christened, and I didn't get married in a Catholic church.
Magella was understanding when her daughter Stephanie stopped observing Catholic traditions. Understanding up to a point.
I think that was the one time I did feel a bit, was when she said Niamh, the oldest girl, wasn't going to be baptised. I did feel a bit, oh my God. I think it was the one time I did feel hurt, or I don't know what way I felt, though. I wasn't pleased, to put it that way. But then I thought, sure, why would she, you know? And so I just baptised her myself. Yeah, well, it was just a matter of throwing some water over them and saying a wee blessing. And then a friend of mine, Father James, he blessed her too one time.
And why was that important to you?
I don't know, it just made me feel that they were part of the Christian community, I suppose. I mean, I told her. Well, I didn't do it and not tell her. I told her.
No, I don't mind. I'm not, I'm not anti-religion. So I never said, like, they'll never be baptised or that I wouldn't allow them to be baptised or, you know, I wouldn't allow them to go to mass or church. I'm not against religion. I want them to be tolerant of all religions.
Magella and Stephanie from Like Family with Brenda Donoghue on RTE Radio 1, striving to accommodate each other's beliefs.
I want to tell you a story about a conversation I witnessed in a mosque which changed my life.
Similar sentiments in a widely shared YouTube video, parts of which were played on The Ray D'Arcy Show and Morning Ireland.
They found it very difficult to sit there and listen and exchange views.
This is Lyra McKee from a TED Talk in Belfast. She was referring to a visit she made to Florida.
For me, though, the hardest part of the trip was when we got to Orlando and they told us we were going to be visiting a mosque. Now, you ask yourself, why would I find it hard to visit a mosque? Well, for those of you who don't have gaydar, I'm gay. And don't worry, you can laugh, it's okay. And I hated myself for much of my life because of what religion taught me about people like me. And when I stopped hating myself, I started hating religion. But I was intrigued by this mosque because it was in Orlando. And a year to the week that we were in Orlando, 49 people were slaughtered in a gay nightclub called Pulse. And this mosque had led the response to that tragedy and had condemned it. And I was intrigued by that. This was at a time when Christian churches in Orlando were refusing to bury some of the dead because they were gay. So to have a church come out and or a mosque come out and condemn this was a big deal. People tell me there is no way the churches will change their teaching or the mosques will change their teachings. You're mad. And I would have agreed with them. But 6 weeks ago, I was out in a gay bar, not this one, with my friend, Jordan. He's from a Free Presbyterian DUP voting family in County Legendary. Avoid that Londonderry-Derry thing, I hate that. And we were out there with his mum, who is a Scottish Free P who goes to church every Sunday. And she was out in this bar supporting her gay son, just like Brenda Marquez McCool was out in Pulse that night supporting her gay son. Don't tell me there's no hope, because for too many LGBT young people, that is the only thing they have that keeps them living. And by the way, that Free Presbyterian mother went into work the next day and told everyone about this amazing thing she'd been to called a drag show. Now, if you had told me that I'd be sitting in a gay bar with one of Ian Paisley's disciples drinking cocktails and watching a drag show, I'd have told you you were mad.
Newsroom. I'm Noel Fergerty. First news just reaching us here from Northern Ireland. A 29-year-old woman has been killed after shots were fired in Derry late last night. Police are treating
29-year-old Lyra McKee died after a gunman fired towards police officers during a search operation in the Creggan area of the city. During the course of last night's rioting, over 50 petrol bombs were thrown at officers.
She was a really lovely person. You know, she was brimful of life and love and creativity. She was in love with her partner. She'd just moved to Derry to be with her. She had been caring for her mum, who she was devoted to in Belfast before that. You know, like, she died on the 21st anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Like, this really has got to be a wake-up call to the politicians. You know, Northern Ireland has got to be taken in hand. It's ludicrous that that situation in Derry is going on. And everybody knew that there was going to be trouble this weekend. You know, this is happening. Like, we're sleepwalking into this again. It's happening on the Loyalist side as well as on the Republican side. There are people out there exploiting vulnerable young people who have all kinds of problems, notably poverty and mental health issues. And Lyra saw all that and she was writing about all that, but she was writing about it with great love for humanity.
Finally, I'd like to send a message to all LGBT young people who are currently struggling, especially those from faith backgrounds. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29:11. This talk is in memory of the Pulse 49 and all LGBT people who've died by suicide. Thank you very much, folks.
Lyra McKee. I'll put a link to her TED Talk on the Playback webpage. Before that, you heard our friend Susan McKay on Today with Katie Hannan. Donegal band In Their Thousands, an extract from their song Acrasia, that was from a Studio 8 session on Arena, the arts programme on Radio 1 on Wednesday.
That evening, when I got home from school, my father had returned from the hospital and he confirmed the news. It wasn't good.
On Sunday, also on Radio 1, John McKenna told a story about his family.
We ate in silence. My mother's empty chair, a reminder of how quickly our lives had changed and how uncertain the future had become. The meal over, my father went to make some tea and returned from the back kitchen carrying the teapot and the tart my mother had made the night before. He placed it on the table and slowly sat down. We both stared at the perfectly cooked pastry risen above the deeply filled fruit. Neither one of us spoke. The silence seemed to last an age. A blast of cold rain against the windowpane finally broke it. We could not eat it, my father said. We could throw it in the bin, but I'm not sure your mother would be impressed. I leaned across and cut two slices, and slowly we ate them. A kind of last supper. And the first of many meals we would share together in the weeks between that evening and my mother's death a month later. A breaking of bread and hearts.
From Sunday Miscellany on Radio 1, John McKenna, such a matching of voice and writing. And the choice of words was a concern on Morning Ireland on Thursday morning. Social Affairs correspondent Joe Little was previewing the Mother and Baby Homes Commission interim report with Rachel English.
And it will focus on burial arrangements at those institutions. Many survivors prefer not to call them homes. They weren't home to anybody.
Well, because
really.
Homes is quite a soft
it's
word,
a soft,
whereas institutions
word.
Is a far harsher word.
Well, at least it's a neutral word.
The Commission's fifth interim report published this morning is highly critical of the Sisters of Bon Secours who ran the home and former members and officials of Galway County Council which owned it. In her opening address this morning, the Minister for Children and Youth Affairs, Dr. Catherine Zappone, described the report as significant.
Never did I anticipate that in assuming the Children's Ministry, I would be spending so much time speaking about death. There's something very unnatural about the death of a child.
The human remains found by the Commission are not in a sewage tank, but they're in a second structure with 20 chambers, which was built within the decommissioned large sewage tank.
In all of the discussion about the report, one word jumped out. Haphazard. An innocuous sort of word, but when Alison O'Reilly of the Daily Mail referred to it on Today with Sean O'Rourke, it conjured up an image that stopped you in your tracks.
There was no evidence of shrouding or coffins in those graves with the children's remains in tomb, and that the children's remains, which we know were between 35 fetal weeks and 2 to 3 years, were found in a haphazard arrangement.
Alison O'Reilly from the Daily Mail. Apt also that the word shroud should be mentioned in Holy Week. The Maynooth College Chapel Choir during the Solemn Liturgy for Good Friday, broadcast live on RTE Radio 1 Extra and Radio 1 Longwave.
Thank you.
Playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.
Welcome back. The first advertisements for European Parliament candidates have started to appear. And on Countrywide, they said goodbye to one incumbent MEP, Marion Harkin.
It's the travel. I'm not complaining. That's part of the job. But it really takes it out of you.
Despite the travel, Marion is proud of the work that the Parliament has done.
This term, we have finally got our act together on Social Europe. You won't read about it in the papers because, of course, good legislation is not good news. Bad legislation is, as it were. But we now have legislation around transparent and predictable working conditions. Let's say, especially for those in the gig economy, we have same pay for same work in the same place. And while people mightn't think much of that and say, well, we always had that, really. Actually, we didn't. If a company sent workers here, let's say on a tender, they could pay them minimum rates in construction, whatever. And we heard phrases like race to the bottom, etc.
This new law sets minimum rights and it demands increased transparency for people who work for companies like Deliveroo or Uber.
Petula Martin on the business news in Drive Time. Her story about the gig economy legislation at the beginning of the bulletin contrasted with her story at the end of the bulletin.
Now, finally, would you like to work lots of overtime? Well, there's been a backlash online to comments by the founder of Alibaba in China, who described working overtime as a huge blessing. Billionaire Jack Ma supports working what's called 996 in China. That's 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. Now, he's not the only one who favours overtime. Last year, Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, tweeted that nobody ever changed the world on 40 hours a week. He's also a billionaire. I guess if you're guaranteed to become a billionaire, then working all that overtime might just be worth it.
Petula Martin from Drive Time. And China featured in World Report, where Yvonne Murray told of a new technological experiment in Chinese schools.
A green square around a student's head on the display monitor indicates that he or she is focused on study, looking at the teacher, asking questions, writing things down. A red square, on the other hand, shows that that student is not paying attention, chatting to his or her classmates, or has fallen asleep. Flickering on screen is also the student's individual ID number, each identified with facial recognition technology, should there be any doubt as to who that dozy student is. In a readout on the right of the screen, the students are ranked alongside their classmates for attentiveness, and each one is given an overall score out of 100.
From World Report.
1600 to 1800 euro for three iPads. That's a lot of money.
Technology in Irish schools was covered by Emma O'Kelly, education correspondent, who reported that the rush to replace books with tablets in Irish schools is being questioned.
Arts and humanities librarian Patty Punch told me how the university is now teaching first-year students how to take written as opposed to typed notes in their lectures. They're doing it, she says, simply because it's better.
In typing, your fingers are simply moving and you're copying, right? But in note-taking, you make decisions to form the words and the letters in a certain way. And that forming of the words on the paper is also reflected in how your brain works. You retain more when you physically write the words down.
Patty Punch from the library in UL. There was a time when libraries such as hers couldn't stock this week's Book on One. It was banned. The book is Edna O'Brien's Country Girls from 1960, extracts of which are read every night on Radio 1 at 20 past 11 during late date.
Neither of us had men. We had dates, of course. No steady men. But dates are risky. Only the Sunday before, Baba had had a date with a man who sold cosmetics. He came to collect her in a car painted all over with slogans. Give her pink satin, lovely pink satin, for that schoolgirl bloom. It was a blue flashy car, and the slogans were in silver. Baba heard him honk, and she looked out to see what kind of car he had. Oh, holy God! I'm not going out in that circus wagon. Go down and tell him I'm having a hemorrhage. I hated the word hemorrhage. It was one of her new words to sound tough. I went down and told him that she'd had a headache.
Hilary O'Shaughnessy reading The Book on One The Country Girls by Edna O'Brien. Dave Fanning on 2FM came across an unexpected relationship. He was talking to neurologist Neil Tuberty, who's just written a new book about his job.
So this chap at around the age of 15, and I met him when he was in his 40s or 50s, he woke up one day and he started hiccuping and never stopped. I thought, that's amazing. So I met him many, many years later, and he came in with his wife, which was the first observation, that he'd hiccuped his way up the aisle, through marriage, through children, through a job. And I went, Jesus, you know, some people will put up with everything. And I get annoyed with people who eat noisily. I mean, I thought that was amazing. So the point was that we looked at it, did a scan, not rocket science, and so on, found a little stroke there in the, let's call it the hiccup center. And while I could give him a few medications or potions, if you will, to make it a little less annoying for him and others, he said, I don't really need those. He said, I've learned to live with it. And his wife said, you get used to it. And I went, wow, do you? And the point was that sometimes just knowing that that's the diagnosis and you need not necessarily be able to fix it, it takes away the fear of all the other potential things of, yeah, I'm going to die from this.
Neurologist Neil Tuberty with Dave Fanning on 2FM. And there were two stories of bravery this week, both involving women and violence.
Now, last Friday, Barry O'Donoghue was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment after being found guilty of assaulting and threatening to kill his former partner, Kerry Gamble.
Kerry spoke to Ray Darcy about publishing photographs of injuries to her face taken by a hospital photographer.
So you have two black eyes and your left eye, I think, is badly bloodshot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the eye, that was the socket that was broken. I published those photographs because I felt any embarrassment by publishing them far paled in comparison to the fact that my silence was taken from me by Barry. I just felt that the years of abuse that I suffered from him were fueled by my silence, and by saying nothing, I allowed that to continue on. And I just really felt that this is a way of taking back my silence.
Kerry Gamble with Ray Darcy. The full interview, which is worth listening to, is available on the Ray Darcy Show page on the Radio 1 section of rte.ie. Click on Tuesday.
Kate Mulhern is on the line now. Good morning, Kate.
And then Ryan Tuberty spoke to Kate Mulhern.
I'm 17.
And is on her school holidays this week. And she was out walking her dog.
Well, I felt that someone was following me, and I texted my friend that I just met, and I said that someone was following me and what should I do? And he was like, you need to get home really fast. And just as I read the text, the man that was following me cut across the road up to the opposite side, and there was a black car waiting at the end of the road, and he ran down and he got into it. And then the car speeded around the corner and he got out and grabbed my arm and pulled me towards the car. And just as he did that, I just seen an opening to his ribs, so I kicked him as hard as I could and he fell back against the car and he got it in. I just ran.
Right. That is terrifying. Tell me about your state of mind. When he's grabbed your wrist, what were you thinking?
I was just thinking, like, this is like, I think it was more like fight or flight, that I knew, well, it's either I'm going to be pulled into the car or I can fight back and go home and call the police and get help instead of standing here. Just, I had to think quick on my toes.
And boy, did you think quickly, because you said when you were just a minute ago that you saw a gap where you could see his ribs. Is that right?
Yeah. Like, it was literally just a quick glance. I literally just seen it. I was like, well, that's exactly where I need to kick him for him to stop holding me.
Now, he what? Fell back or groaned or shouted? What did he say or do at that point?
He just fell back against the car and he kind of like mumbled and groaned and he just fell back into the car and they just drove off.
And how were you at that point as the car headed off?
I was just crying.
Yeah, and shocked.
Yeah.
Okay, and actually I'm looking at a picture of you here. You're in a lot of the papers today, but I notice you're wearing a particular type of outfit today, which makes a lot of sense. Tell us about your interest or your hobby in life.
I'm on the Irish National Karate Team, and I started karate when I was 9, so I've been doing it for 8 years now.
He picked the wrong girl, didn't he?
Yeah.
Kate Mulhern with Ryan Tuberty. And to end, back to the sports show Game on 2FM, which proved this week that whatever about all politics being local, it's definitely true for sports, at least for Irish fans. Because even though the chat at the beginning of the week was about Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and the golf, somehow the Irish put it in local perspective. JP McManus, for example, was talking about watching Tiger's winning putt.
Well, I could feel the adrenaline running through me. It was something else. You know, not like watching the All-Ireland last year.
And of course, when Tiger Woods was on the 18th green, he can't but have been hoping that what he was achieving in Augusta would be an inspiration for Mayo football.
And the final one from Peter in County Kildare. Don't worry, Hugh. Rory will win the Masters right after Mayo win the All-Ireland.
That's it for this week. Back again next weekend with Playback Podcast at 4:30 on Friday afternoon. Of course, as well as the podcast, we also broadcast on Saturday morning on Radio 1 at 9:10. In the meantime, if you hear something you really liked on RTE's audio services that you think we should share, let us know by email to playback@rte.ie. Slán.
Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Times Weekend Edition. Your weekend's in good hands with our sumptuous food features, intrepid travel stories and engrossing sports coverage.